Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Nall. Nice to have you with us today. We begin our program, as always, with the latest on health and healing. Today, from Flinders University, comes a study about, well, cranberries can be shown now to absolutely positively help prevent urinary tract infections for women. And that's a big deal. Now, we're talking about unsweetened cranberry juice or even cranberry concentrate, and even cranberries, they've been touted for a long time as being protective against urinary tract infections, or what are called UTIs. A review by the Cochrane Database of Systematic Reviews just showed this week, and that's the most respected independent institution for scientific review in the world, that yes, there is significant evidence that cranberries reduce the risk of these infections in comparison to placebo or no treatment at all. They looked at 26 different trials and then another 50 trials, and they said absolutely it works with thousands and thousands of people, as much as a 54% reduction in the infection. So if you want to prevent urinary tract infections, the best thing to do is to take cranberry juice, unsweetened, on a regular basis. Another study, this is from Tabris University, shows that in clinical tests that reveal that black cumin, that's C-U-M-I-N, seed, what is called nigella, N-I-G-E-L-L-A, sativa, S-A-T-I-V-A, better known as just black cumin seed oil. Now, it comes in an oil, and I recommend that you take it not straight. Now, some can, but it's best to always take it in a juice. I like just to take it in some orange juice, or you might take it in a smoothie, because it's a little strong on the stomach. But it kills everything. It kills bacteria and viruses and parasites. It's terrific, fungus and yeast and candida. And in this case, it also helps treat hypothyroidism, or underactive thyroid, that a lot of people have, and especially the problems with thyroid once a woman goes through menopause, where the whole metabolism slows down. So it can help all this. In fact, it's been said that black cumin seed oil is the single most important thing to help your body of all the things you could ever put in it. And this was published in the British Medical Journal, Complementary and Alternative Medicine. So always have in your refrigerator a pint of black cumin seed oil. A cold, a flu, that you get off an airplane, think you might have been exposed to something, you take a teaspoon of black cumin seed oil and dilute it into a smoothie or a juice. Another good study that's just out today, and I get these by going to the National Library of Medicine, and this deals with oil pulling with coconut oil. And this is from a Kannur Dental College in India. And oil pulling is very common, and you're not actually pulling. What you do, you just put a tablespoon of coconut oil in your mouth and swish it around for about a minute. It's called pulling, P-U-L-L-I-N-G. And it's been shown, yes, it does work. It decreases plaque and gingivitis. All right. And this was published in the Nigerian Medical Journal. It looked at the effects of this coconut oil on plaque formation and plaque-induced gingivitis. And it was done in the Department of Preventive Dentistry at the college. So, something that you've heard about possibly, maybe never have done, but just swish around for about a minute. And don't swallow it and just spit it out, and if you want to go longer, you can, but it's really good for your dental hygiene and your gums. Does all that, all right? Inexpensive, easy to do, non-toxic, and it has anti-inflammatory and antiseptic properties. For those of you who are breast cancer survivors, there's a new study from Stanford University Medical Center. Women with triple negative breast cancer who received multiple antibiotic prescriptions within 3 years of their cancer diagnosis were more likely to experience disease reoccurrence and to die from their cancer than those who took fewer courses of drugs. And that's according to researchers at Stanford Medical. All right, so another study from Stanford University Medical Center shows that women who have breast cancer, if you're using antibiotics instead of some other more natural way of dealing with bacterial infections, think about this. Antibiotic use for women with triple negative breast cancer who receive multiple antibiotic prescriptions within 3 years after their cancer diagnosis were more likely to experience disease reoccurrence of the cancer and to die from their cancer than those who took fewer courses of the drugs. That's according to a study by researchers at Stanford Medicine. The effect on survival was not due to differences in cancer severity, the study showed. The risk increased substantially with the total number of antibiotics prescribed. We're a nation that overdoes antibiotics. In fact, we overdo all drugs. And in fact, a lot of conditions we suffer from are due to the drugs themselves. And so think of all the other ways that you could help, like Podiarco, which is an herb for bacterial infections, vitamin C and quercetin, vitamin D3, zinc. These also are substantially beneficial if you're trying to deal with bacterial infections. But we always go to antibiotics. Antibiotics are life-saving when nothing else works, but we shouldn't be using them all the time. And this study shows that. The people didn't die because of the cancer. They died because of the use of the antibiotics. Just a heads up, a warning, because otherwise people don't know this, all right? And finally, from the Danish Cancer Society Research Center, lower selenium levels lead to higher cancer risk. Now, selenium is not difficult to get. You can get it in your diet. You can just take a supplement. And almost all supplements have at least 200 micrograms, MCG, of selenium, and that's plenty to help protect you. But unfortunately, we don't even have that. Levels of selenium, a mineral essential to good health, are so low in the soil it's affecting the food chain and the diets and ultimately the risk of disease. Because of commercial farming and because of depletion of the essential minerals in the soil, we just have low selenium levels, and that leads to a higher risk of cancer. Just take a selenium supplement, all right? It's that simple because it possesses cancer-protective effects. And the variation in human dietary intake, with a lot of people eating junk food all the time, means they're not getting selenium at all. And Brazil nuts are good sources of it. Fish, you can get it. But we're not getting it. So let's start taking a supplement, all right? And help protect you from cancer. And that would be a good thing, anything that helps. I'll do one last one. It's called this University of Winnipeg and Manitoba, both in Canada. The secret to staying motivated, according to the university, have you ever started off well on a new goal, such as losing weight or saving more money, only to find that motivation fizzles after a period of time? Researchers from the University of Winnipeg and University of Manitoba have discovered one possible explanation. Our source of motivation changes as we make progress towards a goal. Their findings are available online in the Journal of Consumer Psychology. In the study, investigators predicted that during the early stages of pursuing a goal, participants would be motivated by hopes and aspirations and positive aspects of reaching their desired outcome. For example, people wanted to lose 20 pounds would imagine their appearance at a desired weight, 20 pounds less, and buying new clothes and feeling more energy and just feeling better about yourself. Who wouldn't, right? This is known as promotion motivation, and people in this mindset are motivated by positive things they can do to make progress, such as exercising more, eating more healthy fruits and vegetables, and eating less junk food. And as people drew closer to reaching their goals, however, the researchers predicted that people would switch to a preventative motivation mindset. Now they would be motivated by their responsibilities and duties and desires to avoid something negative. People trying to lose 20 pounds might think about the disappointment of possibly falling short of the weight loss goal or not fitting into a coveted piece of clothing. They would start focusing on things to avoid doing wrong, such as steering clear of desserts and a sedentary lifestyle. The researchers conducted 5 experiments and found that motivation switched from promotion to prevention as study participants made progress on their goals. The results of the study show that people may have better luck sustaining motivation in the late stages if they focus upon what to avoid in order to reach their goals. And for those who are trying to save money for a house or a trip, for example, initially it may work to pursue positive saving strategies like getting a higher paying job or investing money properly. Later in the process, focus on avoidance strategies like going out to dinner less or foregoing expensive purchases will work better. So, just some suggestions, because right now we're a nation that's overwhelmed by crisis, and a lot of people just are giving up. They have no motivation to do anything. They just feel like a deer in the headlights. They freeze and just try to get through each day. No, we need to be positively inclined and motivated, and then we can set our sights on what can I change today to make it a better day for myself? And then carry that forward all day. Even if the whole world is unaware or non-concerned about your changes, you should be. When I get up each morning, I make sure I make my bed and I make it right. And that when I go out to an exercise in the morning, that I bring a new mindset for the day. It's a new day. Yesterday was different. Now, what can I do today to keep this positive insight going? We're all going to be hit with crisis. We're all going to be hit with different dramas, things that upset us. And just don't personalize it. Say, okay, it's just some information. And that, too, we will survive. And that kind of mindset allows you to take things, some good calls, bad calls, and still keep going forward. Just a thought. We're going to take a break and come right back. We have a lot to share. Please stay with us. Welcome back, everyone. I'm Gary Nall. Today's going to be a little heady day. We're going to do some deep diving. Up in just a few moments will be a new clip by a person that has done an enormous amount of original investigative journalism. He seems to always be a couple of steps ahead of where everyone else is in the field. And so we're going to look forward to hearing from him in a clip that is called Your Guide to Fifth Generation Warfare. And I'm talking about James Corbett of the Corbett Report, outstanding journalist. Just a brief overview before we get there. You may not be aware of it, but the fifth generation is here, and it doesn't involve tanks and guns and armies. No, it's far more insidious and impacts every person on the planet. It's being able to control your mind, being able to influence you against your own will and against your own interest, but you will be in something of a soma state, a chemically induced state. This is part of their agenda, and they brag about it. In fact, we have several clips from neuroscientists, including one from MIT, that I don't have time today to play, but I'll play you, where they've actually created, it exists now, a completely artificial intelligence in a robotic head-to-head with a human, and the artificial intelligence is able to infuse its thoughts and commands into a human brain. I told you we were going to get there. We're here faster than what I thought. Following that will be a follow-up from Neil Oliver about all manners of freedom are being eroded. And you need to hear these too. That'll take up half the program. But I quickly want to bring you up to date on a few things that are of concern. and one that you should all be concerned about. We posted an article entitled "The Most Dangerous International Treaty Ever Proposed." Lou Ampanisi sent this to me, and it's real. We will be fighting it. We'll be doing programs against it, where the World Health Organization wants to have exclusive domain, usurping all other laws, national laws, state laws, local laws. So they'll determine who will be vaccinated and for what and how often and the consequences if you don't. And they will determine everything about any health emergency. That's dangerous. Now, mind you, the World Health Organization is controlled by three groups: the World Economic Forum and its chief financial benefactors, China, and the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, meaning Bill Gates. Do you really want them deciding what is a crisis, what is not, what the remedies are, and what cannot be used? More on that in details coming up. But also, if you remember, it was about three years ago, when I said that China's gross domestic product is not even one-eighth of the United States's, but it will meet the United States on two levels, in its income, but also in its production. When either of those two, and certainly when both of those two are announced, you'll see a drop in the dollar. Then I've been telling you about, be careful about the BRICS nations. Be careful where you have your money. It shouldn't be in banks or bonds or stocks. Anything attached to an asset, including real estate, could drop anywhere from 20 to 50%, I mean real fast, when the dollar is no longer the world's reserve currency. And I'm going to give you a whole description of what that means on tomorrow's program in a commentary, brain commentary, written by a journalist who breaks it down into lay language. But now, BRICS is just accelerating. They're like a cheetah that went from 40 to 60 miles an hour. And they have all these other countries, Saudi Arabia, Argentina, United Arab Emirates, Qatar, Kuwait, who are joining with them in having their own bag of currencies. Right now, the currencies that are exchanged around the world, the dominant ones, are the United States dollar. That's the dominant one. But then the Canadian dollar, the Swiss franc, the British pound, the European euro, and the Japanese yen. Now Japan is going to do business with China. So what's happening is there is a quantum acceleration in everything I told you. Everything is sped up. So here's what happened this morning. Quote, this is from Business Insider, very reputable. Quote, China just overtook the United States as the world's largest economy. I predicted it. I told you it was coming. That's the first shoe to drop. China just overtook the United States as the world's largest economy. Quote, sorry, America, China just overtook the U.S. to become the world's largest economy, according to the International Monetary Fund. Chris Giles of the Financial Times flagged up the change. He also alerted us in April that it was all about to happen. Basically, the method used, and then it goes into this. So, all right, they're ahead of us now in manufacturing. We will decrease manufacturing because we offshored all of our corporations and businesses, and that could be done elsewhere cheaply. That was just a small elite group, and BlackRock and the others are behind all this. And then the next step will be the worst step. About 7 years ago, China's gross domestic product, its total income, was in the neighborhood of somewhere around $3 trillion. This year, $16 trillion. Now, with all of its new consortium of trading partners, it'll exceed the United States in the next 12 to 24 months. The day you hear that reported, watch the dollar drop, the stocks will drop, we'll lose trillions of dollars. You'll lose your 401k, your retirement funds, a lot of it. Overnight. It'll happen so quick that the average person that doesn't want to be involved in any thinking or any planning or any preparation will go, what just happened? Well, fool, while you were asleep and paying attention to the Cardassians or the latest baseball game, your life savings was just taken from you. Now, try to survive on what you got left. This is going to happen. It is absolutely, positively, 100% going to happen. The United States is going to lose its superpower status, its dollar exchange status. So get the hell out of the banks and get into buy your own, pay for it and complete. Buy your own RV so you can go in the states that are safe to be in and good people and opportunities. Get out of debt. Stop buying stuff and sell if you are in debt. That's just my suggestion. What you do is up to you. But I just wanted to share that with you. It's happened. But something worse has happened. And we're, I believe, kind of exclusive on this because we are always scanning the world for the latest important and verifiable story. We want to thank Dr. Robert Malone, who we did an exclusive interview with and who was a part of our 10.5-hour webinar on what to do if you're impacted by COVID, long COVID, vaccinated or unvaccinated. Quote, the worst atrocity in the history of the world has been confirmed with no accountability or justice forthcoming. I'm going to quote a few. The whole article we posted. Listen carefully. This is all using the government's own documents. Let me repeat that for those who try to say none of this is real. No, it is real. It is not only real, but it's all the documents coming from the National Institutes of Health that oversees the umbrella organization, oversees Fauci and all the others. And we can thank Judicial Watch because they're the ones who sued and got this. Here's what he has to say. The World Health Organization estimates worldwide that there were 767,740,140 confirmed cases of COVID-19, including 6,908,544 deaths as of April 19, 2023. All right, that's just last Thursday. This does not include additional components of the excess mortality during COVID crisis being documented by many in Western nations for which scientists and the various governments seem not to know how or why this is a causative agent, and no government seems to want to investigate. Although most will agree privately that these deaths are also related to COVID, public health policies in some way or another, these include lockdowns, from suicide, violence, alcohol, and drug abuse, long COVID, vaccine deaths, lack of medical care for cancer and other diseases that didn't get happening when hospitals would not take them, all told the estimate for total deaths from COVID crisis is around 10 million people or more. 10 million people is a very big number. It is hard to even fathom. Now I'll skip down to where he gets into the details, because everything here is based upon a 552-page report from, listen carefully, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. These documents include the initial grant applications, biosketches, budgets, and annual reports to the National Institute of Health from Echo Health Alliance. These describe the specific aims of the project, meaning what did they want to do with the money they were asking for, which includes, listen carefully, quote, creating mutant viruses, SARS and MERS viruses, quote, to better predict the capacity of our COVID viruses to infect people, end quote. Specific, I'm quoting directly from the documents, testing predictions of COVID interspecies transmission. Mind you, this is not from a mosquito or a bat to another animal. This is from the bat to humans. Quote, with bat COVID viruses that we've isolated and sequenced and using live virus or pseudovirus infection in cells of different origin or expressing different receptor molecules, we will assess potential for each isolated virus and those with receptor binding site sequence to spill over. We will do this by sequencing the spike or other receptor binding fusion protein genes from all of our bat COVID virus receptor vaccine or bat viruses and other potential receptors. We will then use receptor mutant pseudovirus binding assays, in vitro studies in bat, primate, and human They have it right here in human and other species cell lines. And with humanized mice, we're particularly interested in interesting viruses are identified as phylogenetically or isolated. These tests will provide public health relevant data and are also will improve our predictive model to better target bat species. Okay, let's stop there. And then it just goes into all the actual quotes, and all of it shows gain-of-function research. All of it shows that they were putting different viruses inside this virus to weaponize it. Because when was the last time you heard of 700 million people being infected by a virus from a bat? You haven't, and you wouldn't. So this was weaponized to infect humans, and it did. And now we have what can be taken into any court. So Robert Kennedy Jr. and all the other lawyers, all of you out there, if you want to know the Achilles heel, it has been provided in their own language. This shows that Anthony Fauci lied constantly. All the scientists associated with him lied constantly. It showed that everyone at the CDC and FDA who were aware of this information lied. It shows the media protected them. So now we don't have to guess where the virus came from. They acknowledge it. And it was only through a Freedom of Information Act lawsuit that that we got this information. It's them in their own language because they needed the money. And this goes clear back. They were doing this research back in the teens. All right? So for 5 to 10 years, they've been working on this. And they hid this from the public. They never acknowledged this at any time, that they were weaponizing a virus that could impact humans because we had no disease that required it. We had no vaccine that would require this kind of approach to this kind of virus, which doesn't work in any case. It not only doesn't protect you, it actually makes you more susceptible to developing COVID. And we have all the evidence on that now. Nursing homes and senior citizens that were COVID negative got the vaccine, became COVID positive. That means the COVID vaccine infected people and frequently caused their death. So now we have, and he is correct, the largest crimes against humanity. I'm not equating this to the First and Second World War. I am equating this to that which was not a war on a battlefield where you had 62 million or more people killed in the Second World War. I'm talking about something that humans created that we all lined up to get, not all of us. And now we see it was all contrived. It was in the media and as being for our benefit, but it was a controlled experiment. We have the actual language gain of function in there. So when Fauci says we've never funded, lies. This man deserves to be in prison the rest of his life. And everyone associated with him and all the scientists. Just want to share that with you because that is important. And I believe we're the first radio program to bring that to you in the United States. And you have the whole document there, page 195 of the document from the Health and Human Services. Quote, we will do this sequencing, the spike, or the receptor binding fusion protein genes from all our bat coronaviruses, creating mutants. Listen to what they said. We're going to create mutants. Wow. To identify how significantly each would need to evolve to use the ACE2 receptors in the body. So they knew they were creating mutants. They knew they were creating monsters. They never told anyone. Not a single press conference, not a single article, nothing. So then suddenly when SARS appears and COVID virus in the COVID virus family, why was this different than any cold or flu virus? Because those weren't artificially manufactured. This was. So let the lawsuits begin and let those who promoted this have a moment of reflection. You're being wrong this time, including people within Pacific and other so-called progressive outlets. You've contributed to the worst public health crisis in world history. Those 10 million deaths, they're on you, friend, whether you like it or not. So keep telling us about how your opinion and how you feel about something matters, how your identity politics and your wokeism and your critical thinking is more important than scientific reality and facts. I want to share that with you. All right. So that's it tomorrow. John Michael Greer, America's Empire is Bankrupt, the Dollar is Finally Being Dethroned, from Unheard. I'll quote this tomorrow. It's a brilliant essay. But now we're going to go to our first clip. And this is a clip that's going to show you how, without being aware of it, you have been controlled, programmed, and how they're doing it through this new technique, all the new techniques, and disinformation campaigns, and controlling the message. Now to the clip.
We are in the middle of a world-changing war right now. Oh, I don't mean the war in Ukraine, the one that all the media are asking you to focus your attention on. Yes, that conflict continues to escalate, and every day there are new stories about provocations and threats that could lead to a nuclear exchange. But that's not the war I'm referring to. No, the war I'm talking about is an even broader war. A war that is taking place everywhere on the globe, even as I speak, and that involves virtually everyone on the planet, young and old, male and female, military and civilian. It is the war of every government against its own population, and every international institution against free humanity. This is no ordinary war, however. Most of the victims of this warfare aren't even able to identify it as war, nor do they understand that they are combatants in it. It's called fifth generation warfare, and I'm here to tell you all about it. I am James Corbett of The Corbett Report, and this is your guide to fifth generation warfare. The basic idea behind this term, 5GW, is that in the modern era, wars are not fought by armies or guerrillas, but in the minds of common citizens. There are two important things to note about this definition. The first is that fifth generation warfare is not waged against either standing armies of nation states or guerrilla insurgents, but against everyday citizens. The second is that the war is not being fought in a battlefield somewhere, but in the mind. Let's expand the definition somewhat to include the fact that this war is being waged at all levels, not just the mental. The gist of it is this. Fifth generation warfare is an all-out war that is being waged against all of us by our governments and the international organizations to which they belong. It's being waged against each and every one of us right now, and it is a battle for full-spectrum dominance over every single aspect of your life. Your movements and interactions, your transactions, even your innermost thoughts and feelings and desires. Governments the world over are working with corporations to leverage technology to control you down to the genomic level, and they will not stop until each and every person who resists them is subdued or eliminated. The most incredible part of all of this is that so few know that the war is even taking place, let alone that they are a combatant in it. The best way to understand this war is to look at some of the ways that it is being waged against us.
Information warfare.
Stop me if you've heard this before, but this is an info war, and the powers that shouldn't be are engaged in a war for your mind. Of course, you have heard of info wars if you've been in the alternative media space for any length of time, and for good reason. Information warfare is an absolutely essential part of the war on everyone that defines fifth generation warfare. The most obvious way to understand this is to look at the actual military forces that are engaging in psychological operations against their own citizens.
It says here, a letter from Nova Scotia government sent out to residents to warn about a pack of wolves on the loose in the province was forged by Canadian military personnel as part of a propaganda training mission that went off the rails. The letter told residents to be wary of wolves that had been reintroduced into the area by the provincial and federal governments and warned the animals were now roaming the Annapolis Valley. The letter, which later became public, sparked concerns and questions among residents, but was later branded as fake by the Nova Scotia government, which didn't even know it was the military who was behind the deception. The training also involved using a loudspeaker to generate wolf sounds, the Canadian forces confirmed to this newspaper. Guys, let that sink in for a second. They created a fake letter from the government, put it out there saying that there's dangerous wolves, and they set up loudspeakers in the area projecting out wolf noises. This isn't just research, you know, this just isn't just a training exercise. They're actively engaging in this psychological operation to scare people using loudspeakers? This is unbelievable.
But it's not just out-and-out military operations by soldiers dressed up in camo fatigues that are part of this fifth-generation infowar. In the war on everyone, the establishment uses every means at its disposal to manipulate the public's perception. Take Richard Stengel, the former editor of Time who bestowed Time's Person of the Year dishonor on you back in 2006, who chaired a Council on Foreign Relations conversation in which he defends the U.S. government's use of propaganda against its own citizens.
Basically, every country creates their own narrative story. And you know, my old job at the State Department was what people used to joke as the chief propagandist job. We haven't talked about propaganda. Propaganda, I'm not against propaganda. Every country does it, and they have to do it to their own population. And I don't necessarily think it's that awful.
Or take Hill & Knowlton, the PR firm hired by the Kuwaiti government to create the Naira deception in the first Gulf War.
They took the babies out of the incubators. Took the incubators and left the children to die on the cold floor.
Who were retained by the WHO in 2020 to identify celebrity influencers who could be used to amplify the scamdemic messaging.
The One World Together at Home event showcased the who's who of top music stars and celebrities, who came together over the weekend for a special broadcast of music, comedy, and personal messages, all in gratitude to those around the world on the front lines of the coronavirus pandemic.
So what can we do? We've got to take care of our healthcare workers, and we've got to buy them time by taking care of ourselves.
The event was led by the World Health Organization and the nonprofit group Global Citizen.
Or take the UK government's Scientific Pandemic Influenza Group on Behaviors, which outright admits that they use psychological techniques to manipulate the public into fearing the scamdemic, a move that even some of the panel's own members called totalitarian. And no one bats an eyelid. Perhaps the most insidious part of the fifth generation infowar is that it has become so normalized that everyone knows it is happening, but no one thinks of it as warfare. Of course everything is advertising and propaganda. And of course it's being used to manipulate our behavior. That's just how the world works, isn't it? But we ignore the real nature of the infowar at our own peril. After all, I've often observed that this is a war for your mind, and that the most contested battle space in the world is the space between your ears. You might have thought I meant that metaphorically, but actually, I mean it quite literally. Which brings us to
neurological warfare.
If you listen to Dr. James Giordano speak without listening to what he's saying, you get the impression he's merely an articulate, well-informed scientist who's passionate about his research. When you do listen to what he's saying, however, or even just look at his PowerPoint slides like the NeuroST for NSID slide, you realize that he is Dr. Strangelove. Or if not Dr. Strangelove himself, then at least Dr. Strangelove's spokesman. But it's not nuclear Armageddon that motivates Giordano. It's what he calls weapons of mass disruption, the various technologies for neurological intervention that the U.S. military and militaries around the world are developing. These include, in Giordano's well-rehearsed patter, the drugs, bugs, toxins, and devices that can either enhance or disrupt the cognitive functions of their target, like the high CNS aggregation nanoparticulates that, according to Giordano, clump in the brain or the vasculature and create essentially what looks like a hemorrhagic diathesis. As sci-fi as this sounds, he insists that these nanoparticulates and many, many other horrific neurological weapons are already being worked on.
The idea here is that I can get something called high CNS aggregation material that is essentially invisible to the naked eye and even to most scanners because it is so small that it selectively goes through most levels of filter porosity. These are then inhaled either through the nasal mucosa or absorbed through the oral mucosa. They have high CNS affinity. They clump in the brain or in the vasculature, and they create essentially what looks like a hemorrhagic diathesis, in other words, a hemorrhage predisposition or a clot predisposition in the brain. What I've done is I've created a stroking agent, and it's very, very difficult to gain attribution to do that. I can use that on a variety of levels, from the individual to the group, highly disruptive. And in fact, this is one of the things that has been entertained and examined to some extent by my colleagues in NATO and to those who are working on the use of neurobiological sciences to create populational disruption. Very, very worried about the potential for these nanoparticulate agents to be CNS aggregating agents to cause neural disruption.
And just in case you didn't get the point, you'll notice he illustrates his slide with an image of a human brain in the crosshairs of one of these neurological weapons. There's nothing hard to understand about the picture that's being painted here. We're at war with an enemy who is literally targeting our brains. But yet again, it isn't just the literal use of neurological weapons by conventional militaries in conventional war settings that we, the largely unwitting combatants of this fifth-generation war on everyone, have to worry about. As my listeners already know, avowed technocrat Elon Musk is trying to sell his Neuralink brain chip technology to the hipster crowd as a cool and sexy way to upgrade your cognition, or so the coming AI godhead will have mercy on us, or something like that. Anyway, you should totally stick the Neuralink in your head at the earliest opportunity. And definitely don't ask any questions about why so many of the macaque monkeys and other test animals that Neuralink were using in their brain-machine interface experiments have dropped dead. To anyone not yet a victim of the information warfare operation designed to prepare humanity for the coming transhuman dystopia, all of this sounds insane. But for those who have fallen for the InfoWars psyop of the enemy, these types of mind-altering technologies are exactly as advertised, exciting opportunities to upgrade the feeble biological wetware we call our brain. But if you think you can avoid the biological aspect of the fifth generation war by simply avoiding the brain chip, you're out of luck. You're also going to have to deal with
biological warfare.
The bio-warfare narrative is, understandably, back at the forefront of the public consciousness in recent years, not just because of the scamdemic, but also because of the questions being raised about the US-backed Ukrainian biolabs and whatever work they may or may not be doing on Russia's doorstep. This picture, for example, comes straight from army.mil, which was only too happy to brag as recently as last July that US soldiers were conducting hands-on training and field training exercises with Ukrainian troops in laboratory and field environments that included ensuring the readiness of deployable mobile laboratories. Nothing to see here, folks. Perhaps the only surprising thing about the article is that they haven't scrubbed it from their website yet. But once again, if we are only thinking of biowarfare in conventional military terms, we neglect the much, much wider operation to manipulate, control, and weaponize all aspects of our environment, our food supply, and even our genome itself for the purposes of the ruling oligarchs. This fifth generation biological warfare being waged against us includes the mRNA and DNA and genetically modified adenovirus vector vaccines that have been normalized over the past 2 years, and which, as the miraculously lucky companies that bet it all on this technology like to brag, is reprogramming the software of life. The genetically modified organisms, both GMO crops and GMO animals, that are now being unleashed upon the world in an uncontrolled experiment that puts our health and the very future of the biosphere in jeopardy. The push towards synthetic, lab-based food that is being funded by the usual eugenicist billionaires, and which threatens to sever humanity from the natural abundance of the Earth, make us dependent on an increasingly shrinking number of companies for our food supply, and, ultimately, to drive us towards a Soylent Green-style future. I'm sure you can fill in the blanks with myriad other examples of the attacks upon the world's air, water, and biome that constitute this unconstrained fifth-generation biological war being waged against us. When and if you do put the pieces of this puzzle together and seek to warn people en masse that they're under attack, your ability to resist this agenda will be predicated on your ability to use your accumulated resources, your wealth, to foster communities of resistance. Don't worry, though. The enemy has that.
That gives you an idea that none of these actions are unintended. For example, historically, if we had a problem like Watergate, then that was the issue of the day. Everyone investigated, either pro or con, depending upon their political and ideological positions. Now we have 100 different things going on simultaneously. And I see this as both positive and negative. The positive, as much as I detest the loss of freedom of speech, the ability of people to tell the truth and forms that historically were there to tell that truth, and those are all vanishing. That's not by accident. Corporations are trying to get in good with the so-called woke agenda by doing stupid things, and people are standing up and walking away from the products. Good for them. That's one. But then paying $113 billion to the most corrupt regime in Europe and knowing that they can't audit it because at least 40% or more of the money went, you're talking about $30 to $40 billion minimally, was simply stolen with no consequence. Few people, 10 people were fired, but everyone got to keep the rest of their ill-gotten gains. We did the same thing in Afghanistan, same thing in Iraq. So everywhere we go with the intent of peace and freedom and democracy. Look at Libya, look at Syria, look at Iraq, look at Afghanistan, look at Venezuela, and look at all the other countries that we have invaded or caused regime change. We bring nothing but despair, but there's a profit to be made from that, and they can't make that profit. They can't do that unless they first condition the American public what they're doing is correct, even if it's not. So everywhere you look, in medicine, COVID, take your vaccines, everything is right, and if you think otherwise, you're a denier. They were wrong about everything, at a consequence that at least 80% of the people in the United States didn't have to die, but did because of them. That's just not manslaughter. That's intentional manipulation of information. On Wall Street and financing, on buying homes you shouldn't, and credit cards you shouldn't have because you can't pay it back. So we're faced with dozens of these problems. And the worse the problems become, here's what you got to hear in context, the greater the likelihood that these systems will collapse out of unmitigated greed and having no concept what it is to be an average person, because the average person is not spoken back. Now, few are doing so at school board meetings, challenging the curriculum, and others in ways that haven't yet joined together. We have no peace movement in the United States at this moment. And so they're counting upon us doing nothing. But the other side of that is, now they're going to be all these hearings which are going on now, and their house of cards will collapse. And they'll come forward, whistleblowers will come forward to save their own skin, and they'll give this over, and the public will see the total corruption of our entire system. We're not just corrupt in one place. We're entire, 100% of all of our institutions have betrayed us. So the sooner that collapses, the sooner alternative systems will emerge that hopefully will be more fair and honest and ethical and transparent to take their place. But also walk away, get off the grid, get off their grid. Then they don't have control over you as they would otherwise. Now let's go to a person who cites this very eloquently, and he has done this on many occasions, but this one was particularly interesting, Neil Oliver. And I'm just going to tell our WBA audience in 6 minutes, we'll say goodbye to you, but we're going to continue it right through until it's over, and then people can call in with their comments. 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888, because we don't have someone as intelligent, in my opinion, articulate on these issues in our mainstream media. We do in the alternative media, not the mainstream media, as Neil Oliver is for all of Europe. Let's go to Neil Oliver.
Scientists suggest that what we experience as reality might be only a computer simulation, and that we may be no more than computer-generated characters within a matrix. If that were so, they ask, how would we even know? For similar reasons, I wonder how we might awaken to the possibility we are not free citizens in a democracy, but victims of a protection racket controlled by a crime syndicate. Again, how would we know? I suppose a clue would be if our supposed leaders came to be associated in the minds of more and more people with behaviour that just looks criminal. As a for instance, look at the Scottish National Party. Members of a government, senior officials of that government's governing party, arrested and questioned by police in relation to the party's finances. What suspicions might be raised in the minds of income tax-paying, council tax-paying citizens while officers dig holes in the back garden of the leader of the country, apparently in search of evidence of crime? During the past 3 years, we saw over and over elected politicians and their officials insisting citizens must obey life-altering regulations while they themselves routinely ignored them. Our Prime Minister, in a time of war, discouraged firms from doing business with Russia, while his own family continued to profit from doing exactly that. Our Prime Minister has presided over the implementation of taxes for hard-working citizens while he takes advantage of a much lower rate, made an option by his great wealth. What does that look like to people struggling just to keep their heads above water? Imagine how people might look on at such things and say, that's criminal. In a protection racket run by a crime syndicate, hapless souls have no alternative but to hand over funds to an organisation that makes plain failure to do so will result in dire consequences. Income tax, value-added tax, council tax, small business tax, inheritance tax. The only benefit on offer for handing over the cash to protection racketeers is being left unmolested until the next payment is due. Victims of the racket are kept in a perpetual state of anxiety, distracted by the grim necessity of earning enough money to live and keep a family, while somehow managing at the same time to have enough surplus to pay for the protection from harm. What's that, you ask? Men can be women? We owe reparations for slavery? The countryside's racist. The planet will catch fire unless I give up my gas boiler. We're going to war with who next? Give me a minute, because right now I can't afford to feed my children. As someone only recently awake to what's going on, I look back and wonder just how much I've missed over the years. But at the same time, I'm sure the powers that be used to be better at pretending to have our best interests at heart. Now their disdain and contempt are overwhelmingly obvious. The prices of food, fuel and energy keep going up while the wholesale costs of those commodities are coming down. Imagine how people might learn of such things and say, that's criminal. It's almost as though life is deliberately being made harder by those with the power to make it so, at a time when life might be made easier. It turns out Build Back Better didn't apply to you and me. Instead, after three dreadful years, consumers pay more and more while the profits harvested by the providers of those commodities go up and up. Is it just me, or was the pretense of compassion better once? Is it just me, or are we being invited to know in no uncertain terms that our noses are being rubbed in the abuse of power? All manner of freedoms are being eroded. The simple freedom to jump in the car and go where we want looks set to be made a thing of the past. Not to worry, though. Soon all we could desire will be within a 15-minute walk of our homes. For those still clinging to notions of democracy, consider the World Health Organization's Pandemic Preparedness Treaty, by which our country will be bound by May 2024 unless action to the contrary is taken. The WHO has 192 member states. It sits in Geneva, where its representatives pay no tax and enjoy diplomatic immunity. They are unelected and unaccountable. Over 80% of WHO funds come not from member states, but from so-called stakeholders, big pharma and the like. Influence over the WHO is for sale to the highest bidder. The second biggest funder is the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. By the existing paperwork, the WHO at least pays lip service to democracy. But by the terms of proposed amendments to the existing treaty, they seek fundamental change. If the new treaty is ratified, the WHO will decide when to declare a world health emergency. The WHO will define what is misinformation. The WHO will have the legally binding power to enforce lockdowns and vaccinations. The WHO will have the power to force companies here in Britain to produce and export medical products to the wider world. Declared respect for human rights and dignity will literally be erased from the treaty and replaced with vague assurances about equity. All of this will come about unless our government acts to the contrary before the treaty is made binding in May next year. I suppose the question is, do you want you and your children living under the protection provided by a racket like the WHO? But let's pause for a moment to think how we might have got here. Almost invariably, an unchallenged crime syndicate grows more and more blatant. At the same time, absence of a challenge leads to complacency. Things have been going our way for a long time, they think. Therefore, we might assume things will always go our way. Unbridled audacity and careless complacency can also lead to unintended consequences. I noticed that the pain over the last 3 years followed events that might have been interpreted as unexpected defiance on the part of people assumed to be living meekly under the yoke. Back in 2016, there was a referendum about membership of the European Union. A person might say complacency saw the government of the day assuming it had the result in the bag and so allowed the plebiscite to go ahead. Let the little people think they have a say, bless them. Instead, a majority voted to leave that European Union. That same year in the USA, Hillary Clinton had expected the keys to the White House, in fact, assumed they were hers by right. So complacent was she described those supporting her opponent as a basket of deplorables. A majority of those deplorables chose Donald Trump. Here in the UK, in the aftermath of the vote to leave the EU, all manner of forces were mustered to defy the largest popular vote in the history of these islands. Heaven and earth were moved to undo that which had been done. While it proved impossible to set aside the vote and rejoin the EU, it turned out that that technicality did not matter. Brexit happened in name only. As things turned out, in every way that matters, the UK has remained in thrall to the panjandrums of the EU. In the United States, heaven and earth were moved to oust that Donald Trump from the White House. All the tricks, the CIA, the FBI, Facebook and Google and more were deployed to try and rid the US of that most turbulent president. I look back on those events, that referendum and that US presidential election happening so close together and notice how much changed in the aftermath. So, so much. We experienced a sequence of events few of us might have predicted in our wildest dreams. I hardly need to list them, but what the heck, for old time's sake, a global pandemic, confined to our homes for 23 hours a day, livelihoods destroyed, health and well-being ruined, travel bans, an internationally coordinated bid to inject every man, woman, child and infant on the planet with a brand new medical product that makes billions for Big Pharma. The greatest transfer of wealth in history, unprecedented creation of currency and disastrous devaluation in the process, the looming prospect of the end of cash and its replacement with digital currencies controlled by privately owned, secretive and unaccountable banks. 15-minute cities, the psychopathic acceleration of net zero, the prospect of digital IDs, of surveillance society, of one world government, making racism the height of fashion again, as long as it's anti-white racism, of the return of war to the European mainland and the threat of its escalation to envelop the world and to trigger the blossoming of nuclear Armageddon. In idle moments, I wonder if those world-changing developments would have arrived as, and more importantly, when they did, if UK citizens had voted to stay in the EU and if their American cousins had voted to install another Clinton in the White House, if we hadn't been so many flies in their ointment, what then? Call me a conspiracy theorist, by all means. Nowadays, that's a badge I wear with pride. And so where are we now? Well, we have Joe Biden and the surreal goings-on of his administration. The man is cognitively unfit. His family are enveloped in scandal regarding business dealings with Ukraine and China. The US seems to have no functioning southern border. Tens of millions of strangers flow across in an unchecked stream. Cities are surrendered to crime. They know we can see, and yet even that doesn't seem to matter. Citizens questioning the decay are dismissed as far-right extremists and racists. Here in the UK, protesters challenging Mayor Sadiq Khan's ruinous ULEZ scheme are slandered as far-right by the BBC. Victims of the medical products pushed as vaccines, all those uncounted dead and the injured, are ignored by all but a handful of MPs. Their plight is likewise dismissed by the vast majority of the mainstream media. A protection racket is about fear, the determination to make good on threats, and perhaps most importantly, the acceptance on the part of the victims that they are vulnerable and alone in the face of overwhelming power. Fiat currencies and fractional reserve banking are Ponzi schemes by any other name, and in any other context would be regarded as criminal. Try setting up your own equivalent and see what happens. Just because a government decrees a situation legal does not in any absolute sense make that situation lawful. What it comes down to in the end is whether enough of the people accept the moral authority of those presumed to govern them. I ask myself whether our so-called leaders have the required moral authority. Always now, I find the answer, at least for me, is no. They do not. They do not. Here's the thing. If so-called leaders who, by their own actions or by the actions of those to whom they are linked, invite the attentions of the police, if so-called leaders bully and threaten citizens into behaving one way while they themselves feel free to behave another, If so-called leaders are deaf and dumb in the face of terrible harms and suffering, if so-called leaders grow rich via the same system that impoverishes those below them in the hierarchy, I say those are not legitimate to wield power over us. All of which begs the obvious question, why are we paying for this fraud?
He is right. Why are we paying? Why are we voting for these people? Because we stay attached, even on a cognitive level, a feeling that somehow we're free. You're not free if you're using their credit cards, their banks, their media, their medical establishment. Time now for you, Tree Sleet. Thank you all for listening and have a nice day.